This is Audible.
Blackstone presents Scarred by Emily McIntyre. This book is read by Ella Lynch and Paul Woodson.
For the freaks, the misfits, the bullied, the loners, the insecure, the damaged, you are worthy. You are warriors. Doubt thou that the stars are fire? Doubt thou that the sun doth move? Doubt truth to be a liar? But never doubt that I love. William Shakespeare, Hamlet. Prologue, Tristan. Loyalty. One word, three syllables, seven letters. Zero meaning. Although, if you listen to my brother's never-ending speeches, you'd think it runs through his veins thicker than the blood that binds us. If you listened to gossip in the court, you'd believe the same. Prince Michael will make a fine king. Carry on his father's legacy, that's to be sure. Something thick lodges its spiked edges in my throat, my gaze moving between the roaring flames of the fireplace at the other end of the room and the oil lamp placed in the center of the table, the one occupied by members of the Privy Council. Half a dozen faces, and not one of them filled with grief. My chest pulls. Life is about appearances, sire, and for appearances' sake we must do what needs to be done. Xander, my father's, now my brother's, head advisor, states, his focus on where Michael sits. Just as it's known your father passed peacefully in his bed, it's also known you have quite the appetite. Xander, please, I cut in, pressing my back against the wood-panelled wall. No need to convince us of where my father died. My eyes move to my mother, the only woman in the room, as she dabs beneath her hollow brown eyes with a monogrammed handkerchief. Normally she wouldn't be here in Saxham at all, choosing to spend most of her days in the countryside estate, but seeing as how we're fresh off the funeral of her husband, Michael insisted she stay. And his word is law. It's the peaceful part we have to lie about, I continue, my gaze settling on my brother. A small smirk pulls at his lips, his amber eyes sparking. A fiery rage surges through my middle and up my throat, wrapping around my tongue, the taste bitter and tart. My boot smacks the wood as I push off the wall and move toward the center of the room until I'm towering over the table, wedged between my mother and Xander. I take my time, soaking in every single face that sits here as if it's just another day, their statues stuffed full of pomp and importance. As if we didn't just lose someone important, someone vital, the only person left who cared.
I'm sure I don't know what you mean, Xander squawks, his voice pinched as he pushes up his horn-rimmed glasses.
I lift my chin as I stare down at him, noting the grey strands peppering his otherwise dark hair. He's been with the family for years, ever since I was a boy, and at first he was a treasured person in my life. But life is ever changing, and Xander's warmth doused quickly with the icy bitterness of greed. Just like the rest of them. Of course not, I hum, tapping my finger against my temple. Silly me.
Can we get back to the subject? Michael huffs, running his hand over his head, the light brown strands ruffling under his fingers. How father took his last breath is not what's important.
Michael, my mother gasps, still dabbing away under her lids.
Spinning until I face her, I lean down, reaching out to wipe her face, the ridge of her cheek hard against my palm. She sucks in a breath as she looks up at me, her eyes shimmering, and I press my thumb into her skin before pulling away to glance at my hand. My stomach burns when I realize the pads of my fingers are still dry as a bone. Actors, all of them.
Mother, I tisk. Stop the dramatics. Any more fake tears and you'll wrinkle.
Winking, I pat her cheek and stand up straight, noticing every eye in the room is on us. It's no secret there's no love lost between her and me. I grin, allowing my lips to peel back from my teeth as I look from one person to the next. The air thins, and Lord Reginald, one of the council members, shifts in his velvet-backed chair. Relax, I roll my eyes. I won't do anything untoward. Lord Reginald scoffs, and my attention falls to him. Something you'd like to share, Reginald? He clears his throat, his cheeks growing ruddy, showcasing the nerves he's trying so very hard to hide.
You'll forgive me for not believing you, Tristan.
I cock my head. I think you mean Your Highness. His mouth purses before he bows his head.
Of course, Your Highness.
My jaw ticks as I take him in. Reginald has always been one of the weakest members of the council, bitter and jealous of everyone else. He attached himself to my brother's side when they were young, and he stayed through every moment of torture inflicted on me through the years at Michael and his pack's hands. But I'm no longer a child, and they can't bully me like they used to. Xander pinches the bridge of his nose.
Sire, please. You need a wife. Your people need a queen.
They have one, Michael booms, his head nodding toward our mother. I do not wish to marry.
No one is asking you to stop your dalliances, Xander sighs. But these laws have been in place for generations. To not take a wife, it will make you look weak.
If you're not up to the duty, brother, by all means do us a favor and disappear. I wave my hand through the air. Michael's eyes narrow as they snap to mine, the corner of his mouth twisting into a mocking grin.
And leave Gloria Terra to who? You?
Chuckles burst from around the table, and my muscles tighten beneath the surface of my skin, the urge to show them all just how easily I could make them bow streaming through my insides. The wooden clock snicks as its long hand moves, drawing my attention away. It's nearing supper. My fingers tense as they run through the disheveled black strands of my hair, and I back up a pace toward the large double oak doors.
Well, this has been a treat, I start. But, sadly, I've grown bored.
You're not dismissed, Tristan, Michael snaps.
You do not dismiss me, brother,
I sneer, anger snapping at my chest.
I could not care less about which unfortunate soul will have the torment of you rotting into them for eternity.
So disrespectful.
Xander spits, shaking his head.
Your brother is the king.
A grin spreads across my face, and I lock my gaze on Michael's, anticipation thrumming through my veins. Well then, I incline my head. Long live the king.
Chapter 1 Sarah B.
You'll leave in the morning.
My uncle sips on his wine, his dark eyes like arrows soaring across the table and filleting the flesh of my chest. He's never been an affectionate man, but he's my family all the same, and we have the same goal. To seek vengeance on the Farsar family for the murder of my father. We have slotted many moving pieces carefully into place, ensuring that when the crowned prince was in need, I would be the one there to accept his hand. It's only been 1 year since the death of my father, and 2 since that of the king, but finally, we've received word. It's time. Arranged betrothals, while not uncommon, have gone slightly out of fashion in recent years. After all, it's 1910, no longer the 1800s, and in all the storybooks, and even here in the poverty-ridden streets of Silver, people marry for love. Or their idea of it, anyway. But I've never been one with ideas of grandeur, thinking some white knight will ride in on his steed and save me like some helpless damsel in distress. There may be distress, but I'm no helpless damsel. Besides, sometimes the only way to enact genuine change is by becoming part of the machine and ripping out the broken pieces yourself. So, if I have to smile, flirt, and seduce my way into the new king's good graces, that's what I intend to do. It's my duty, after all, to both my family and my people. Silver, which was once known for its abundant lands and groundbreaking industrialization, has now become barren and lame, cast to the side like an ugly red-headed stepchild, unworthy of the crown's time or attention. Now we're not known at all. Drought and famine mixing with the despair that runs through the city streets like cracks in the pavement. I suppose that's what happens when you're situated deep within a forest nestled high in the clouds. You become hard to see and easy to forget.
You understand what's at stake? Uncle Rafe asks, bringing me out of my reverie.
Nodding, I wipe my mouth with a white cloth napkin, placing it back in my lap. Yes, of course. He grins, his skin crinkling as he taps his fingers on the bulbous top of his wood cane.
You'll bring honour to our name.
The heady sense of his approval lights me up like a cannon, and I sit a little straighter in my chair, smiling back at him.
And you'll trust no one except your cousin, he adds.
He glances at my mother, ever docile and quiet as she eats her meal, taking small bites, her unruly black hair so like mine, creating a curtain around her face. She rarely makes eye contact, always choosing to keep her head down and her fingers busy with needlework and dusty books, rather than forge a relationship with the daughter who's taken over everything since my father left her a widow. I suspect she never wanted to be a mother, and that she wanted to marry even less. She's never said the words, but there's no need when her actions speak so loudly. But my father wanted her, and that's all that mattered. And when she grew with child, they expected it to be the next male heir to the Beatro line. Instead, they got a wild, raven-haired female with a sense of adventure and a mouth that speaks out of turn. And my father loved me all the same, even if my mother never showed a lick of affection. The day I lost him, a piece of me was lost too. Curdled like sour milk and left in the centre of my chest to fester and rot. He went to plead with the monarchy for aid, took it upon himself to travel through our forests and over the plains until he made it to the Saxham Castle. But the crown didn't listen to his plight, and my cousin Alexander sent word that they had him hung for treason, because he dared to speak out and say they needed to do more. Alexander tried to save him, but there's only so much he can do when he's head advisor to the king. My uncle Rafe has been indispensable ever since, and while he's done nothing but support me, I still ache to be held in the arms of my father. Instead, all that's left is a family pendant that I wear around my neck like an oath, one that reminds me every single day of what I've lost. And who's to blame for my sorrow. So now, while other girls my age spend their time daydreaming about falling in love, I spend mine learning how to play into political warfare while still portraying the etiquette of nobility. If you want to burn down hell, you must learn to play the devil's game. The metaphorical crown being placed on my head is almost as heavy as the knowledge that everyone depends on me to see things through. And the Farsar family's reign has been allowed to go on too long, their power and influence having decayed with time, becoming less about people and country, and more about overindulgence and greed. So, I'll go to court, and I'll do what needs to be done to save my people and seek justice for those we've lost. Still, it isn't until hours later when full realization hits. Tonight is my last night in Silver. My heart beats a staccato rhythm as I shove my feet into thick black boots and wrap my cloak around my shoulders, pinning my frizzy hair back until it's in a tight bun at the nape of my neck. Pulling the hood over my head, I look in the mirror, ensuring it's hiding my features. Glancing at the door to my bedroom, I eye the lock, making sure it's in place, before spinning back around and heading to my window. My room is on the second floor, but I'm no stranger to the height, having made my way down the jagged stone wall dozens of times before. My lungs cramp from my shallow breaths, and adrenaline whips through my veins as I make my descent, my feet plopping onto the grass. It's always a risk sneaking out, but one that I'd take 1,000 times over. I stand stock still for a few moments, making sure no one heard me leave before I head around the side of our run-down estate, keeping to the shadowed areas until I reach the cobblestone drive and stare up at the rusted 10-foot gate. My fingers ache as they press into the metal, and my muscles burn as I hoist myself up, climbing the jagged iron until I swing my leg over and hop down to the other side. My chest heaves once my foot meets solid ground, and then I'm off, dashing down the pavement, pulling my hooded cloak tighter, hoping I don't run into anyone on my way. I take 20 minutes to make it to the orphanage on the outskirts of town. It's a small, dilapidated building with zero funding and not enough beds. But Daria, the woman who runs it, is one of my key contacts, and I know that anything I slip her way will make it into the right hands. There should be enough here to get you by until I can send more. I press my fingers into the back of Daria's as she holds the bundle of money and the small basket of bread that I've thrust into her palms. She sniffles, the glossy sheen of her eyes sparkling against the dim candlelight of the small kitchen. Thank you, Sarah. I can't... Her whisper cuts off as a sound from outside the room slices through the air. My heart spasms in my chest and I suck in a breath, my eyes snapping to the darkened hallway, hoping it's not a child loitering outside of their bed. No one can know I'm here. I have to leave, I say, withdrawing my hands and lifting my hood. I'll try to get word to you when I'm able. Make sure things are safe. Daria shakes her head. You've done so much already. Please, I scoff. I've hardly done enough. The clock chimes, and I note the time. Soon the sun will press against the horizon until its light bathes the ground, erasing the darkness, and with it, my cover. I have to go, I repeat in a hushed tone, reaching out to drag her in for a hug. My stomach flips as her arms wind around me, squeezing tight. Don't forget me, Daria. Never, she laughs, although it's a hollow sound. Pulling away, I make my way to the door off the side of the kitchen, my hand wrapping around the cool brass handle. Be safe, my queen, Daria whispers to my back. My heart stutters. I'm no one's queen. I'm just the one who will burn the crown.
Chapter 2. Tristan.
Tristan!
The childlike voice soars across the courtyard, and I glance up from where I'm lounging against the trunk of the weeping willow, charcoal lining my palms and sketchbooks splayed open in my lap. I rub my fingertips on my pant leg, flicking my head to move the strands of hair from my face. The small boy skips over, stopping when he's in front of me, his clothing loose and dirty, like he's been running through the secret underground passages all day, the ones I've shown him. Hello, little lion, I say, amusement tiptoeing its way through my insides. His face splits into a grin, his amber eyes sparkling, a sheen of sweat causing his light brown skin to glisten.
Hi, what are you doing?
He peers down into my lap. I straighten, closing the book. Drawing,
For your arms?
He nods toward my tattoos, hidden beneath my long-sleeved tunic, the dark ink peeking through the cream fabric. The corner of my lips tilts up. Perhaps.
Mama says those things make you a disgrace.
He lowers his voice and leans in so close his nose almost brushes against my forearm. Disgust rolls through me at the fact that a scullery maid assumes she has any right to speak my name. I tilt my head.
And what do you think?
Me?
He straightens, his teeth sinking into his lower lip. You can tell me. I lean forward.
I'm very good at keeping secrets.
His eyes sparkle.
I think I want some too.
My brow quirks. Only the bravest little lions can have them.
I'm brave.
His chest puffs out. Well then, I nod. When you get a little older, if you still feel the same, you come see me.
Simon!
A woman's voice hisses as she runs forward, her gaze growing wide as she looks between us. She stops short when she approaches, her black skirt dusting the ground as she drops into a deep curtsy.
Your Highness, I apologize if he's bothering you.
My jaw ticks, irritation bubbling in the center of my gut. I wasn't bothered until just now.
See, Mama, Tristan likes me,
Simon says. She gasps, reaching out while still in a curtsy and gripping her son's arm tight.
Address him appropriately, Simon.
Why, you never do.
His forehead scrunches. Her shoulders grow taut. My stomach burns, my hand trailing along my brow bone, feeling the thin line of raised flesh that runs from my hairline to just above my cheek. She needn't worry about voicing what we both know she calls me. It's what everyone calls me, although never to my face. They're all far too cowardly for that. Instead, they speak it in secret, their whispers soaking into the stone walls until even the silence suffocates me with its judgment. Tristan is fine, little lion, I stand, brushing off my pants as I do. But only in private. Wouldn't want the others to get any ideas.
Simon, his mother snaps, go back to our quarters now.
He glances at her and then at me. I give a slight nod and he smirks.
Bye, Your Highness.
Spinning around, he runs off. His mother stays in her crouched position, head bowed, until a loud commotion at the front gates has her rising and turning toward the noise. I step in close, my hand reaching out to cup her cheek and turn her face back, the small slivers of muted sun peeking through the clouds and glinting off the silver of my rings.
Kara,
I purr, my fingertips stroking against her silky dark skin. She sucks in a breath as our gazes lock. My grip tightens until she winces. I didn't give you permission to rise. Her breathing stutters as she drops back into a curtsy, once again bowing her head. I stare down at her, her son's earlier words churning like a storm inside my mind.
Your son says you love to speak of me.
I step forward, the tips of my shoes hitting the hem of her skirt. You should be careful about the things you say, Kara. Not everyone is as forgiving. Wouldn't want word to get around that you seem to have forgotten your place. Again? I crouch down in front of her.
Is it true you believe I am a disgrace?
She shakes her head.
He's a child. He loves to make up stories.
Children have such incredible imaginations, don't they? Although, my hand reaches out, my fingers skimming across the back of her neck. I revel in the way her body trembles beneath my touch. If anyone knows about disgraceful acts, it would be his mother. My hand grips the knot of tight ringlets on the back of her head and pulls, satisfaction burning through my chest as she gasps in pain. I lean forward as her back bows, my nose brushing against the side of her face.
Do you think I don't know?
I hiss. She whimpers and it makes my stomach tense in delight. That I'm as stupid as every other person who walks these castle halls? That I don't see the resemblance?
Please,
she stutters, her hands pushing at my chest. Hmm, I hum. Did you plead for him like this? I whisper in her ear, my free hand grasping her throat. My eyes glance at the royal guards lining the entrance gates and the bystanders gathering around them. A few people's gazes skim over us, but just as quickly leave. They all know better than to interfere. Do not make the mistake of confusing me with my brother, I continue, my fingers flexing in her strands. And don't forget your place again, or I'll take great pleasure in reminding you. I release her, pushing her head until she collapses onto the ground, her hands reaching out to catch her fall. And unlike him, I won't care how much you beg. Standing straight, I pick up my sketchbook and stare down at her, enjoying the view of her cowering at my feet. You may rise. She sniffles as she stands, brushing the dirt from her clothing and keeping her eyes pointed toward the ground. Go, I flick my hand. Don't let me see you out here again.
Sir,
she whispers. I turn before she finishes speaking, walking to the shade of the weeping willow and leaning against its trunk, the bark scratching against my back. Xander, my brother, and his personal guard, Timothy, walk out of the castle doors and into the courtyard, making their way to where an automobile is rolling through the gates. Curiosity holds me in place like my feet are encased in lead, and I watch from the shadows, my grip tightening on my notebook as Xander moves toward the auto and opens the door. A thin woman with blonde hair, peeking from under a purple hat, exits first, smiling, before moving to the side. And then a dainty hand reaches out, and another woman places her palm in Xander's. My stomach rises and falls like an avalanche, knowing that I should take my leave, but not being able to move away. Because there she is. The new queen consort has arrived.
Chapter 3. Sarah B. I've seen paintings of the Saxon kingdom my entire life. There's one hanging above the mantel in my uncle's great room back home. A dreary picture, with thunderous clouds looming over a darkened castle. One that was built in the 16th century and has blackened with age. I've always assumed the site was exaggerated for the artwork. Turns out, the paintings don't come anywhere near the reality. The king's driver winds the automobile through the Saxon city streets, passing by women as they laugh in the arms of men as if there isn't a care in the world, blissfully unaware that 5 minutes down the road, the cobblestone turns into dirt and the wide-brimmed hats turn into dirty bonnets and torn clothing over skin and bone. Or maybe they are aware, and they simply don't care. Nothing does justice to the real thing, does it? Shayna, my closest friend turned lady-in-waiting, sighs as she gazes out of the window, her blonde hair peeking from beneath the brim of her hat. You spend your whole life hearing tales, but it is an eerie sight. Her head nods toward the castle, perched on a cliff at the end of a long winding road, lush green forestry surrounding either side. Paintings don't do it justice, indeed. This part of the country seems to lend itself to more of an overcast gloom, a stark difference to the sunshine that used to help grow the crops in Silver, and an anxious energy eats its way through my middle as the buildings that line the streets give way to sycamore and pine, the smell of evergreen permeating through the automobile and stinging my nostrils. The road narrows, and my anxiety grows, my stomach rising and falling with the quickened beats of my heart, as I realise the castle backs up to the angry Vita Ocean, and this is the only way in, and the only way out.
Do you think what they say is true? Shayna asks, twisting her body toward me.
I lift a brow. Depends on what part you're referring to.
That the ghosts of the fallen kings haunt the castle corridors?
She wiggles her fingers in front of her face. I laugh, even though truthfully, I've wondered the same thing. Shayna, you're too old to still believe in ghost stories. Her head tilts.
So you're saying you don't?
A shiver notches its way down my spine. I believe in superstition, I say, but I'd also like to imagine that when someone leaves us, their soul moves on to rest in the kingdom of heaven. She nods. Or hell, I add, the corner of my mouth tilting. If they deserve it. A giggle escapes, her hand coming up to smother the sound.
Sarah, you shouldn't say such things.
It's just us, Shayna. My grin spreads as I shrug, leaning into her. Can't you keep a secret? She scoffs.
Please, I've kept every single one of your wicked deeds to myself since we were little girls.
I adjust against the back of the seat, the steel bones of my corset digging into my ribs.
Would they make a wicked girl a queen?
Her lips purse, her blue eyes sparkling.
With you, Sarah, anything is possible.
Warm contentment settles in my chest, happy that my uncle allowed me to bring her along. Having a familiar face helps to ease the tension knotting its way through my shoulders. I've known Shayna since I was a little girl, us having grown up together on my family's estate. Her mother is a maid, and Shayna and I used to spend our summer days sneaking into the fields and picking fresh berries, making up stories about how we'd find the poisonous ones and bring them back to the boys who gave us trouble. But one of the first things my father taught me was to keep your friends close and your secrets even closer. So while I love Shayna, I don't trust her with the heavy burden of my truths. Even to her, I play the part, and she's none the wiser. Slowly, the landscape stops whizzing by as our automobile stalls, my gaze snapping to the jeweled towers housing the entrance to the castle's courtyard. The stone itself is a dark grey, wet from the earlier rain, or maybe just stained from years of wear. Deep ivy winding up the sides until it reaches the steepled tops and disappears into the small, glassless windows. A lookout area, I'm sure. I wonder if my father had the same view when he arrived, his mind full of hope and his heart filled with courage. The hole in my chest aches.
"We've arrived, m'lady,"
the driver announces. "Yes, I can see that, thank you," I reply, my spine straightening as I run my hands over the lap of my light green travel dress. The metal from the iron gates creak as they open wide, royal guards lining both sides of the yard, their forms draped in black and gold, the crest of a roaring lion on their breast. It's the same image that adorns every flag in Gloria Terra, the Farsa family coat of arms. I swallow down the nerves, staring at their rigid faces as the automobile moves again, stopping once we're just inside the gates. There are a dozen bystanders staring our way, but other than that, there isn't any type of grand fanfare. A small group of men stand in front of us, and I recognise the shorter one immediately, relief flooding through my system at the sight of my cousin Alexander making his way over. The door opens, and Shayna is helped first, and then Alexander's hand reaches for mine. The lace of my sleeve rustles against my wrist as I place my palm on his and step down to the ground. "Xander," I say as he bows, bringing my hand to his lips for a kiss.
"Cousin, it's been too long," he replies as he straightens. "Your travels went well?"
I smile. "Long and uncomfortable, I'm afraid, but happy to be here all the same." He clucks his tongue.
"And my father, he's well?"
"As well as he can be. He sends his regrets he couldn't make the trip."
"Of course," he inclines his head. "Come, let me introduce you to His Majesty."
He pulls my hand until it loops into the crook of his arm and leads me to a man standing in a tan country suit, a smile growing on his handsome face as he trails his gaze over my form. I've learned so much about the royal family over the years that I could point them out with a single glance, despite never having seen them before. And from this man's coiffed brown hair to his broad chest and giant frame, coupled with the unusual amber shade of his eyes, I immediately recognize him. King Michael Farsar III of Gloria Terra. Fire consumes my chest, hatred dripping down my insides as I dip into a curtsy, the lace hem of my skirt swishing against the ground. Your Majesty?
Lady Beatro.
His voice is a deep rumble, booming through the courtyard.
You're much better looking than I imagined.
I straighten and incline my head to hide the flash of irritation that crosses my face. You're too kind, sir. He tilts his chin, his hands resting in his pockets.
I've met your father, you know.
I let my smile widen, even though his mention of my father sends a ball of anguish tearing through my centre. What a pleasure for him to have held your company. King Michael's eyes spark, his posture straightening as a grin blooms on his face.
Yes, well, it would seem that pleasure's being paid forward, since now I'll have yours.
Satisfaction spreads through my chest, warming the blood in my veins as my uncle's voice whispers through my head.
The faster you gain his favour, the quicker you also gain his trust.
Michael steps forward until he's in front of me. So close, I can smell the starch of his clothes, and he leans down, pressing a lingering kiss to my cheek. My stomach jolts at how forward he is, and my eyes scan across the courtyard to see people's reactions, curious to know if this is common demeanour or something special just for me. But other than a few people scattered through the massive yard, no one seems to pay us much mind, although I feel their lingering stares. His hand grazes my waist. I allow his touch, knowing I have no other choice. You can't deny the king, and I have no interest in coming across as difficult. Continuing my perusal of the area, my gaze snags on a beautiful weeping willow in the far corner, a shadowy figure perched beneath its crying branches, his eyes locked on me. My stomach tightens. King Michael whispers something in my ear, and I hum in agreement, although I couldn't tell you what he said. I'm too busy being sucked into this stranger's stare, knowing I should look away, but unable to force myself to follow through. There's a challenge in his gaze that keeps me glued in place, one that stiffens my spine and irritates my nerves, wishing he would be the first to surrender. He doesn't, of course. He simply smirks as he leans against the trunk of the tree, running his hand through the messy locks of his jet black hair, pushing the wayward strands from his forehead. My breathing grows unsteady as I track along the harsh lines of his pale face, his fingers adorned in silver as they brush against his chiseled jaw, and his forearms dark with ink. And then my heart stutters when I notice the scar running through his brow bone and ending just above his cheek, barely visible from this distance, and dull compared to the piercing jade green of his eyes. My middle clamps down tight as I realize who he is. Even if I hadn't spent years studying the Farsar family, his reputation precedes him. Rumors of his temper and tales of his extracurricular activities reaching even the farthest corners of Gloria Terra. They say he's as dangerous as he is unhinged, and I've been firmly instructed to keep my distance. Tristan Farsar, the younger brother of the king, the scarred prince.
Chapter 4. Tristan. What's she like? My gaze cuts to Edward, whom most people would think of as my closest friend, my only friend. The truth is that I have no friends, because friendships are fickle and often a waste of time. However, he is my closest confidant, and the only one I trust enough to be at my side. That he's a general in the king's military is a bonus, because it allows him access to whatever I may need, without drawing attention to the fact that I'm the one who needs it.
His lean frame lounges in the chair across the room, his blonde hair falling over his brows. I glance down at the heavy wooden table, my touch smoothing along the rice paper in my hands, making sure the contents are wrapped nice and tight before I apply the gum edges.
She was...
I pause, rubbing my fingers together to remove the sticky residue of the ganja, small bits of green buds still lingering on my skin.
Mediocre.
I sit back, grasping a match and striking it against the rough edge of the tan lucifer box, my gaze soaking in the bright orange glow of the flame. It transfixes my mind as I watch it burn down the wood stick, the heat becoming intense as it licks against my skin. I move the fire to the end of the cigarette, inhaling before allowing the light to extinguish.
Michael Fosser's bride is mediocre,
Edward laughs. I hum, my mind picturing the girl who came through the castle gates earlier today, wide-eyed and wild-haired, looking so eager to please. She irritated me with her sweet smile and the way she batted her lashes Michael's way. But it wasn't my brother who stained her cheeks pink.
The word in court is she's quite the beauty,
Edward continues. My standards are much higher than that of the court, I reply. Lifting my legs, I prop my feet up, my black boots chunking down on the table as I cross my ankles. She's pleasing to stare at, but as useless as the rest of them.
What more do you need than beauty?
Edward shrugs.
Studious conversation?
My chair tilts on its back legs until I'm staring at the textured ceiling, feeling cold even though there's a fire roaring in the room's corner. Or maybe that's just my insides, where my heart used to be. Now empty and lacking, a hollow ache that craves chaos just to see it burn. Moving the joint to my lips, I inhale, the smoke pouring down my throat and into my lungs, providing a calm my nerves never feel without it. Edward, it's extremely unsettling to me you underestimate the wiles of a woman. They're snakes in sheep's clothing. Remember that always. He purses his lips, his brows lifting and spine straightening, almost as if I've offended him.
You've always been dramatic.
I blow a plume in the air. I've always been right. Irritation sours my stomach at his loose tongue, but reprimanding him will take energy that I don't have. So I'll file it away and remind him of it later when the mood strikes. Right now, I'd rather make him leave. I've never been one to crave the company of others. Perhaps that's because when I was a child, everyone could tell that I was just a little different, no matter how badly I tried to fit in. And even if they couldn't tell, my brother made sure they knew. I snap my chair forward, the impact of the legs hitting the floor vibrating through my body.
Leave me.
Suddenly I'm craving retribution, needing to rid myself of the memories from when I was powerless and at the mercy of Michael and his pack. There's an unofficial gathering to welcome Lady Beatro to court. Unofficial because I'm not required to be in attendance. Although even if I were, I'm not known for adhering to the rules of nobility, and I doubt they'd expect me to show up, which is exactly why I've come. The who's who of the kingdom are all here, high-ranking officials, dukes and viscounts from nearby areas, and all the ladies and gentlemen of the court. Laughter and small chatter echo off the high ceilings and stone columns of the great hall, crystal glasses clutched in bejeweled fingers and rosy cheeks that belay the truth of their intoxication levels. My brother sits at the front on a raised dais, two empty chairs on either side of him, sipping wine and gazing at his people. He's always been this way, even when we were children, always needing to be above it all, flashy and glamorized, admired by everyone, regardless of who he has to push down to do it. The disgust rolls through my stomach, clawing up my throat as he flirts with a servant girl who fills his flute with more to drink. I stick to the shadows, making sure to not draw attention to myself, wanting to see little doe-eyed Lady Beatro when she makes her way into the lion's den. And I don't need to wait long, because the double oak doors creak open and in she walks, her head held high and dark black hair pinned back, perfect ringlets framing her face. Her dress shimmers as she moves, the green complementing the pale cream of her skin, and it would be a lie for me to pretend she doesn't steal the show. She draws every single person, like moths to a flame, as she makes her way through the crowd and toward my brother. Behind her is that same wisp of a girl with sandy blonde hair she showed up with. Suddenly the girl stumbles, her foot sticking in the hem of my new sister-in-law's dress, making them both falter in their steps. Lady Beatrice's face twists as she cuts her a quick glare. It's quick, the slip in her mask, before she smooths the irritation and replaces it once again with a soft, appealing look. But awareness tingles down my spine, and my interest peaks. That interest grows when she stops in front of my brother and curtsies low before taking the spot next to him, his eyes sparkling and lips curving upward as he takes her in. He likes her. Straightening off the darkened wall, I move into the light, the crowd parting for me just as it did for her. Only this time, it's accompanied by stuttered breaths and whispers. People give me a wide berth because they worry about what will happen if they don't. Rumors about the scarred prince run rampant around the kingdom, and while most are fabrication, some start with at least a hint of truth, and I've found the more they fear me, the less they look. And at least for the moment, that's the way I like it. When I near the dais, my brother's face draws down, and I know with every fiber of my being it's because he didn't expect me to be here. Because even though people warily gaze my way, it's still my way instead of his. I sit down in the high-back velvet chair next to him, sinking into the seat and crossing my ankle on my knee, adopting an air of boredom. Tristan, I didn't expect to see you here. Come to meet your future queen, Michael says, gesturing toward Lady Beatro on his opposite side. I glance over, something tightening in my gut when I lock eyes with her. Reaching across the lap of my brother, I hold out my palm, the left side of my mouth curling up. It's improper to lean across the lap of the king to hold conversation, and part of me is surprised Michael doesn't put a stop to it. But of course that would draw the wrong attention his way. Can't have outbursts in public. That wouldn't mesh well with his charisma. She stares at my outstretched hand for long moments before placing her fingers in mine. A twinge of surprise flickers in my chest as I bring her palm to my lips, pressing a soft kiss to the back. Hello, dear sister. Michael scoffs. Don't scare the girl off before she's even been here for a fortnight. Sarah, she whispers, ignoring my brother's words. I quirk a brow. Call me Sarah. We're about to be a family after all. A pleasant smile breaks across her face, but it doesn't reach her eyes, and it does nothing except heighten my curiosity. Don't waste your breath on being cordial with Tristan, sweetheart, Michael says. He'll disappear into whatever gutter he likes to play in soon enough, and won't even remember he's met you. My jaw clenches, anger bubbling as it spreads through my blood and singes my veins. Sarah leans in, the upper half of her body almost entirely in Michael's lap now, as her muddy brown gaze sears into mine. You're hurting me. Glancing down, I realize I'm still holding her hand, my fingers having tightened around hers until my knuckles are blanching white. I drop her palm. Am I? I smirk. So easily. Her eyes narrow. That's enough, Michael hisses. I chuckle, leaning back in my chair and turning my attention to the soiree. Resting my elbow on the arm of my seat, I rub my jaw with my fingers, the days-old stubble rough against my skin. Lady Beatro starts a conversation with my brother, droning on about the most boring of subjects, the weather in silver compared to here, how she enjoyed riding in an automobile, and if she plans to attend Mass on Sunday morning on his arm or come with her ladies. I'm only half paying attention, and my heart kicks in my chest when I spot a dark figure in the back corner of the hall. Edward stands proud a few meters away, his hand on his belt, his attire decked in the black and gold of our country, a gold-woven rope decorating his left shoulder, and my family crest roaring on his chest. Our eyes meet, and I nod toward the shadowed stranger. He follows the movement before understanding dawns on his face, and he makes his way toward them. And then, suddenly, there's a piercing scream that wails through the air, so curdling it makes the ends of my hair rise. "By God!" someone else yells. Edward rushes through the crowd then, all pretense having disappeared, tackling the figure and wrestling them to the ground. The stranger drops to their knees, and the hood of their cloak falls with them, long, dirty hair spilling down the intruder's shoulders. It's a woman. Something heavy thuds, and it's followed by shocked gasps and squeals. People jump backward, looks of horror overcoming their features. As if in slow motion, the object rolls toward the dais and comes to a stop almost perfectly in front of Michael's throne. He shoots up from the seat, his gaze widening as he stares down at Lord Reginald's severed head, his gaping eyes and lolling tongue blue, severed neck tendons dangling, having left a trail of blood behind it. "What is the meaning of this?" Michael demands. Edward jerks the woman to stand, wrenching her bony wrists behind her back with one hand and gripping her hair in the other, forcing her to meet Michael's gaze. My heart rate speeds up, fingers steepling as I watch the scene unfold. She smiles wickedly, her eyes glazed and crazy.
"This is your warning, Michael Farsa the Third."
"Warning from whom?" Michael booms. Her grin widens. Michael's fists clench, his jaw muscles working back and forth. My eyes move from him to his bride-to-be, expecting her to stare in terror and selfishly wanting to revel in her fear, to soak it in like sunshine and let it fuel me through the night. But she sits in silence instead, her head tilted, a curious sheen coasting across her eyes. She's perfectly poised and seems unaffected. Interesting. "I am your king," Michael snaps. The woman bends at the waist, a high-pitched cackle pouring from her mouth and bleeding into the tense and silent air. Edward pulls her upright, tightening his grip on her skull. She spits on the ground.
"You are no king of mine."
Xander appears out of the crowd, storming his way to stand in front of the maniacal woman.
"Who did this to Lord Reginald? Was it you?"
She grins, her head tilting so far to the side her neck looks as though it may snap in half.
"I'd do anything to please His Majesty."
Xander's palm is quick as it whips through the air, the crack reverberating off the walls as the woman's face is thrown to the side. "That's enough, let her speak." Michael's hand flies up, his gaze falling on her. "You've already committed treason. Surely you know death awaits you. So finish your message, filth, and then rot in the dungeons."
"He's coming for you,"
she sing-songs, her body seeming to vibrate in place.
"Who?"
Michael demands. She stills. Her head lowers the tiniest amount, and her mouth breaks into a smile so wide you can see every single rotten tooth.
"The Rebel King."
Chapter 5. Sarah B. The King's private office is as beautiful as the rest of the rooms in the castle. Deep purple velvet covers almost every inch of the dark mahogany furniture, and intricate paintwork lines the ceiling, money bleeding from the walls. The room itself is spacious, almost as large as my personal quarters, but even with its size it feels stifling. A tall, thin royal guard stands to attention behind Michael's desk, and Michael perches in front of it, leaning against the lip. His eyes move back and forth, tracking Xander as he paces a hole in the carpet. The Queen Mother is nowhere to be found. I haven't even met her. And Prince Tristan disappeared after the decapitated head rolled to our feet. Honestly, I was surprised to see him there at all, having been told he rarely makes appearances in court. But I've been here for 2 days and have seen him twice already. My stomach tightens and I shift in my seat, thankful he isn't here right now. He's unsettling. He stares at me as though he can see into the darkest corners of my soul. Or maybe that's just his darkness reaching out and trying to find the blackest parts of mine.
Xander, you worry too much. Have a cigar and calm down, Michael says, flipping open a cedar box on the corner of the desk.
He puts one into his own mouth before passing the other off to Xander, who takes it with a sharp look. My cousin is worried. It's clear in the crow's feet that crinkle the corners of his eyes and in the frown lines that deepen with every passing second. His bony fingers run through his thinning salt and pepper hair, and when they aren't busy pulling on the strands, they're adjusting his circular glasses that slip down the bridge of his nose from his jerky movements. I'd like to speak with Uncle Rafe, I interject. It's all I've been able to think of since the scene in the Great Hall. I hadn't expected there to be an uprising on the outskirts, a mystery man wanting to take the throne for himself, and I'm desperate to find out more. I'm fascinated by the blind loyalty that bled from the treasonous woman's soul. Her willingness to sacrifice so much for her leader, making curiosity bite at my insides. And I need to figure out if this is a wrench in my plans. The worst type of ignorance is one that can be avoided, yet isn't. I won't allow myself to fall into that trap. And my uncle, he'll know what to do. Xander turns to me, although his words are for the king.
Sire, I don't think it's safe to allow communication on such sensitive terms.
Something hot spikes through my chest at his disagreement.
I'll tell my father,
he continues, deciding to speak to me instead of around me. Cousin, I'd prefer to speak with him myself. He'll worry once he hears news. Xander frowns.
Sarah, you aren't here to tell us about your preferences. You're here to be the king's bride. All you need to do is sit down, look pretty, and let me handle things. He'd want to know you're safe, and I'll ensure he does.
My stomach twists, but I settle back in my seat, my hands folding together on my lap. Michael's eyes are watching me, their glassy sheen peeking through the cloud of smoke that curls around his face.
Xander, don't be so harsh on the girl,
he says. Xander spins toward him, his hand whipping through the air.
Are you not concerned, sire? Reginald is dead, and a filthy hyena